Hello everyone, Jamie here. Just wanted to jump on ahead of the episode to firstly wish you a very happy new year and tell you that this episode of the All For One podcast is brought to you by My Diabetes Diet, a personalized diabetes management plan created specifically for people who are struggling with diabetes related issues such as high blood sugar, unwanted weight and high cholesterol, plus many other things to help you improve your overall health, lose weight and manage your diabetes. Their team of qualified nutritionists create personalized meal plans that cover caloric intake, macronutrient composition, and the amount of sugar and cholesterol you need to consume. Now, this isn't just a digital recipe book. This app features include no equipment beginner workouts, grocery lists, detailed progress trackers, activity log, and active diabetes online community. They believe every person deserves to live their best life possible without feeling too restricted or forced to eat foods that they don't like. And as we start off the new year, battling the aftermath of Christmas and lockdowns, I know I've got a few pounds to shift. So what better way to start off on the right foot by leaving it up to the experts at My Diabetes, and it will really be a new year, new you. Just head to www.mydiabetes.diet/all-4, 4. That's www.mydiabetes.diet/all-4-1. And if you use the coupon all41, ALL4ONE, then you will get 75% off a 6-month plan, or in other words, that's a 6-month plan for the price of 3 months. All of those links will be in the description or the show notes below, so do check those out if you're interested. Now, I hope that's helpful to some of you, and by checking out our sponsors, you'll help me make more of these podcasts and YouTube videos. But now, on with the episode. Hello everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of the All For One podcast. Thank you to everybody who's been leaving those reviews like I asked for. So what we're gonna start doing is, well, in order to convince you to leave some reviews and share this podcast with everyone and, you know, get it out there to a wider audience, I'm gonna start giving away some of the very exclusive, brand new, never seen before, I mean never seen before because they don't actually exist yet, they're still getting made as we speak, All For One t-shirts. And if you want to be in with a chance of winning one, all you have to do is leave a review on Acast, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen to this. First, give me 5 stars, and then secondly, write a few words and tell everyone what an amazing podcast this is. So if you want to be in with a chance of winning, then do one of those reviews. I'll be picking my favorite review each month, and that person will get themselves a, imagine it in my hands right now, an All For One t-shirt. Look at that, fancy. Anyway, on with today's show. My guest today is Ben Zeal. And I didn't know that I knew Ben until we linked up on Zoom. But as soon as I saw his face in my little screen down here, I've already seen him on TikTok. So you might have done too. Ben is as well as a TikToker. Ben is a registered dietitian. He is a certified strength and conditioning expert. And as well as being quite big on TikTok, is also quite big on Instagram too. But Ben, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. You're such a riot because you're over here talking about TikTok and I'm thinking, oh, I haven't done anything on TikTok yet, but here it is being recognized.
Oh, right. Okay. I thought you weren't a TikToker, but I was about to argue.
No,
you definitely are.
I am. I feel like it's been such a recent thing that I didn't expect it to actually, you know, be noticed by other people.
Well, I'll tell you for why, Ben, because I started my TikTok account at the end of August, and it's been great for like just explosive growth. People love the diabetes content on TikTok.
Oh, and if you can connect with them, it is hilarious. Some of the comments people leave, it's so rewarding, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that too. And then I posted a video. It was just, you know, a sort of a simple, innocent video about what I like to do when I'm having like a carby a day, when I'm doing a bit of a cheat day. And I mentioned that I'm diabetic in the voiceover quite early on. And I don't know which side of TikTok that it got to, but all of the comments are, I don't think you're diabetic. You're absolutely not diabetic. My grandma's diabetic. You're not diabetic. So, I mean, as well as connecting with other, T1D diet buddies and other people in the Broken Pancreas gang, we may be getting on the For You pages of people who just really don't understand what's going on with our pancreases. But give us an idea of the sort of content that you put out on TikTok.
Absolutely. So on TikTok, I try to take a lot of the big things that are happening with people with diabetes and just make them funny. Because let's be real, people yank out their sights on a door, on like door handles, or people say, oh, you can't have carbs, you can't have cake, you can't have these things. And just putting that humorous twist on it can make the everyday, oh God, here we go again, into something that's actually entertaining and interesting to watch. And people are like, yeah, I really can connect with that. I feel you on that. So that's what I really like about TikTok. I feel like it's a totally different crowd than Instagram too.
I like that you brought up the one with the yanking out the pump sites, because that's one of the first TikToks of yours that came up on my For You page. And then there was another one. It was something about high blood. Did you like do a parody of Watermelon Sugar High or something like that? Or there was just like a high and you had all the high Dexcom readings and that sort of stuff?
Oh, I've had a couple of those. I did one where I made fun of low, like when you wake up in the middle of the night and you just eat the entire fridge and there was just food all around me. I had one with like Dexcom Share where my girlfriend sees my number and I'm like, oh snap, she's gonna see it. She's gonna be angry. So I start typing. That I think was my biggest one on there. I think it got pretty close to 1 million views. And I was thinking, holy cow. Like, wow. This is just a little video, you know, I'm just having fun with this. And suddenly people just really connect with it. So
that's amazing.
That's what I'm here to do.
I mean, fellow T1D content creators, honestly, TikTok is where it's at. And not only is it great and a fun place to be and all that sort of stuff, but to build a community, it's pumping up all of my other socials as well. Loads of people heading to my YouTube, more people listening to this podcast, which is exactly what I want. So, I mean, it's just great all around, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. I absolutely think that it's great to shuttle these people that, again, it's a totally new audience to other places. And that's just, it's one of the underrated things. I just like making them because it's fun. But if you get benefits from it too, it's even better.
Well, social media channels aside, I mean, they're very important with what we do. But that aside, let's talk about you. So your story and diabetes started over 2 decades ago.
Yeah, I feel like it was just yesterday, it feels like, but it's been 21 years now, which is nuts to think about.
And what was it like? Did you sort of have the classic diagnosis? I mean, there's two sort of quite reproduced tropes and stories. You either, end up at the doctor's for something else and then they spot the symptoms in you, or the other one, which is my case, where you don't notice the symptoms and then you end up in hospital with DKA. What was your story?
So mine was closer to the first one, but I'm fortunate enough, my dad's a pediatrician. So when I was a kid, he started to see some of the symptoms when I was 7 years old. We had just moved to another state. I was feeling really just crabby. I was awful. I was peeing all the time. I was just not a friendly human being to pretty much anyone. And I lost, I think, when you're 7 years old, 7 pounds is a lot of weight, right? So I lost 7 pounds and he said, you might have diabetes. So I think my blood sugar was a whopping 260. It wasn't that high.
And let me just do the math, because here in the UK, we do MMLs, you do DL, don't you? So 260. Okay. Hang on, did I do that right? I don't know. I typed something into Google and it just didn't make sense. Anyway, yeah, I'll take your words for it. Okay, great. When I went in, oh God, I don't even know, off the charts. It was unreadable. My ketones were unreadable. But great that your dad knew what he was doing and could spot it in you quite early. Because, that's how it gets quite dangerous, because the symptoms separately, obviously, when you put them all together on paper, they scream type 1 diabetes, but separately and in daily life, they're easily sort of explained away and ignored.
Oh, and people just think, oh, they're having a bad day, or oh, they're just going through a phase, when the reality is there's all these things that are just brewing worse and worse and worse. And I hear stories like yours, unfortunately, way more often than I hear one like mine, where it's usually, oh, I was in the hospital and my blood sugar could not, it just said to be continued on the meter. you know? So.
And did sort of an early diagnosis with type 1 diabetes sort of inform your career choices? Because obviously, you sort of went into, not the same side of health that your father went into, but the sort of, I had a word for it and it's disappeared in my mind, but like the sort of self-improvement focus of health, using and improving your body to be the best it can be, because that's where you ended up. And was it the diabetes that sent you in that direction?
100%. I think it didn't really hit very hard at first. It was kind of like, oh, I'm 7, I'm 8, I'm 9. But as I got older and I got more into the training side of things, I realized, hey, no one knows what they're talking about when it comes to training with diabetes. I would ask different trainers, I'd ask coaches at my school, wherever. No one knew anything. The doctor didn't know when I'd see the doctor. The registered dietitian didn't know when I'd see them. And I'm just thinking, who am I supposed to go to? There's nobody there that understands this. And so then I really, really, really fell in love with training because I was playing sports all through school. And I realized, hey, I want to take this to another level. And then I realized nutrition is the most important part. And nutrition governs all of our blood sugars anyway. So I need to really master this and be that person that can fill that gap where you can eat the things you want to eat. It's just a matter of how smart you are about doing it. And so then being able to feel free and go on my own journey of, hey, I can eat these crazy obscene amounts of food when I'm smart with it, not all the time, maybe like every now and then, but be able to have that freedom to do so. That was the big changing point for me, the turning point,
And I was just thinking about my relationship with food because, I saw a comment on TikTok yesterday and it just sort of hit home that, like, the comment said, I'm not sure that anyone in 2020 has a completely healthy relationship with food. And then that got me thinking with how was my diabetes? So I was diagnosed at 23. So I already had a relationship with food, a relatively healthy one at that point. So how has that changed? And now I'm not 100% sure. I don't know. I'm not that self-reflective, so I haven't worked out. But I definitely do think that food is both my favorite thing and my worst enemy.
Yes, I see that all the time with people with diabetes because it dictates everything for your blood sugar, but at the same time, it's such an integral part of life and woven into culture in such a way where it's super important. So you feel like you're constantly thinking about it. And it's this, oh, I can do everything this one way and have zero taste. Nothing tastes good. Everything's bland and my blood sugars are perfect. Or I can live my life and enjoy food, but then my blood sugars are terrible. And I'm here to basically say they can both be done. You can enjoy food and still have great blood sugars.
And you've got a program called Your Diabetes Insider. So, I guess from personal experience, you've come up with this three-pillar system, a way to make it work. Explain a little bit about that. What's that all about?
Sure. So Your Diabetes Insider is my big, I would say big, but it's the company that I have, which kind of combines the registered dietitian side of things and then the exercise side of things with the blood sugars and kind of takes all three of those and says, these are the three big prongs of diabetes management. Food, like I said, is going to govern everything. Exercise is also critical when it comes to insulin sensitivity. And of course, just to living an amazing, healthy life anyway. And then, of course, the blood sugars are going to be huge. So by taking the three of those and looking at them all at the same time, overlaid on top of each other, we can then make the best decisions for how are we going to decide what to dose? How are we going to decide how to go about dosing? For example, a higher fat meal versus a higher protein meal versus a meal with just carbs in it. So really using those three pieces together to be able to make your blood sugars amazing and have that freedom to be able to live your life and do whatever you want to do, ultimately.
And one thing that I sort of bang on about so much in this podcast is just, it's almost it's almost ironic, it's almost farcical how often I bang on about exercise and how when I exercise, my blood sugar control is just fantastic and I don't need to worry about it and it gives me so much less anxiety over my blood sugar levels and high, you know, okay, more chance of hypo, but definitely just a more steady experience with my blood sugar. And I'm going through a period now where I am deciding to exercise and put in the effort. I've been running, I've been doing my home Zoom workouts again, and eating better, and just already in just a few days, the difference is dramatic. But it's hard, isn't it? And I, you know, I banged on it a bit there to just bring you up to sort of my story and how it is with me. But it's so hard to slip out of that. You know, it's consistency is key, but it's hard sometimes.
Oh, 100%. And I was in a similar boat to you. They closed all of our gyms back in March. I still haven't been inside of a gym in, God, I don't know, 8 months now. It's been insane. And that's very much unlike me. And after a while, it's easy to lose the consistency and lose the motivation, because you're just thinking, great, I'm doing the same workout again. I can only do these 7 or 8 exercises. I'm limited on equipment. I'm limited on time. And people, they need to shift their mindset from it and say, okay, yeah, I might not be able to do everything I'm used to, but how can I make the things I'm doing right now more challenging? How can I make it so I'm still progressing towards something else? Because otherwise, like you said, it's easy to say, oh, I'll skip this one today. Oh, I'll have this takeout today or tomorrow. And suddenly the next day, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. And then after you look up, it's been 2 weeks, you've done nothing. And your blood sugar, like you said, the sensitivity, just, I want to say it's like 2 or 3 days is all you need, either getting on it or getting off of it for your sensitivity to start to shift. Like it's crazy how fast it happens. And even in the research, it shows similar things. This is probably a few years ago, I had a situation where I wasn't able to work out for about a week. And by day 4, my blood sugars were running about 40% higher just from the fact that I couldn't move.
And, you know, if you're feeling down about not exercising, because, I mean, for me, you know, I feel good generally when I exercise. You know, I just feel a bit more like bouncy and that sort of stuff. But when I don't exercise, I start off by feeling a bit guilty. And then that compounded with my blood sugars being off. And I know the reason is because that I haven't exercised. So that bad feeling gets worse. And then at the end of it, I'm sort of, you know, reaching into the freezer for the Halo top just to make myself feel a little bit of positivity. And then there is the vicious circle. But, you know, back on it now, and hopefully after chatting to you, I'll be even more convinced. We're going to head to a quick break now, but after the back of that, we are going to be learning how Ben turned himself into a science experiment, which is how I describe myself when I was first diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. So it's good to see that. And we'll be finding out how you can have your cake and eat that too. So stay tuned to the Awful One podcast. We're back after these ads, which includes an ad for my TikTok account. So check that out. Hi guys, me again. Just wanted to remind you of today's sponsor, My Diabetes, who have an absolutely massive offer for you guys. Just head to www.mydiabetes.diet/all-4-1. And if you use the coupon code all4one, that's ALL4ONE, then you'll get 75% off the 6-month plan. All of those links will be in the description or the show notes. So if you're interested, please check them out. And there's some other ways to support the show if you'd like. You can go to patreon.com/JamieLowTV for as little as £1 there. You can get access to exclusive content and be in direct daily communication with me. Or if you fancy supporting a different way, then you can go to shop.spreadshirt.co.uk/broken-pancreas-gang, where you can get your hands on t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, and other stuff with designs that I made myself. This funky little freestyle Libra design is my favorite right now. And if you fancy helping me out, I'd be more than grateful. It's gonna help me make better and more frequent content after all. There's also a discount on the store right now on the whole shop, and I'll keep that running as long as I'm allowed to. One more thing before we get back on with the episode is I am so close to 10,000 followers on TikTok. So if you become my 10,000th follower, then you'll be in with a chance of winning something from the Spreadshirt shop. Just follow me and comment all for one on one of my videos, and I'll be picking a random winner between now and me hitting 10,000 followers. So good luck. Hello, welcome back to the All For One podcast. My guest today is Ben Zeal, dietitian and TikTok superstar, T1 TikTok superstar. So we'll leave TikTok there because we've got much more important things to talk about. So Ben, I was reaching out to people in Facebook groups and asking them what they would ask a dietitian if they could. Now, I didn't say that the dietitian was type 1 diabetic, so I sort of left it a bit vague. And oh my God, the outpouring of negativity that came in the comments, you know. So I've got a feeling that the relationship generally between people with type 1 diabetes and dietitians isn't that strong. I'm sure you sort of break through, you're a different case because you understand what people with type 1 are going through. And I don't want you to defend, you know, I hate to put you into a position, but do you know what that could be about? Why there was such sort of that outpouring of like, oh, they don't know what's going on in my life and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, 100%. So growing up, obviously, I would see a dietitian every time I go to the endo. And every time I would talk to them, they'd say the same three things every single year from the time I was 7 until I think I stopped seeing them because I was becoming one myself. So it was always 45 to 60 grams at your meals. Sometimes they'd let me have 75 and I felt like that was a really big deal. They would tell me nothing I didn't already know. And it was nothing that I couldn't find on the first page of Google. I think one person one time said to me, this is the last time I went, I was 23 and I was in grad school for nutrition. And I was told I need to eat whole grains, lean meats, and more vegetables. And I was like, lady, you are telling me things that I could have first found on any generic health website. And second, why are we having this conversation if I'm training to be like you? So that was part of what really inspired me to become a dietitian, because the relationship is horrible. Even at the university I was at, we were one of the top schools for becoming a dietitian. And the diabetes lecture they gave, every slide, I raised my hand. And I said, this is wrong. This is outdated. This insulin hasn't been made for 15 years. And after, I think, the 7th or 8th slide, I just gave the rest of the presentation because it was that bad. And that was at a top university. So imagine what these people are being spoon-fed. So I understand the animosity, and that's why I want to break the animosity. But I also challenge my own peers and say, hey, step your game up. Actually understand what's going on in the world of these people living with diabetes, because if you can't connect with them and you just continue regurgitating the same information, it's not going to make a damn bit of difference. They're not going to listen to you and they're never going to take you seriously. So that's been the hardest thing. So I've been there and I've done that, which I think helps, but a lot of the time they don't want to take that next step, and that drives me bananas. So that is where a lot of that stems from, is this, there's no groundbreaking info. And the difference is when you can provide them with something that it makes people with diabetes think, and they realize, hey, I could do this different, or hey, this is actually a great idea. That's when they come back and they become really excited, as opposed to, great, here's another dietitian, can't wait.
Yeah, and we'll come back to some of these comments, because there were some genuine questions in there, which I'll put to you later. But just to give us all a little bit of a teaser, one comment here says, nothing in response to the question, what would you ask a dietitian? Every dietitian I've met as a diabetic was an effing idiot. Well, hopefully you've seen from this podcast so far that Ben is an exception to that rule. But Ben, back to you and diabetes. So we mentioned just before the break that you turned yourself into a science experiment. And when I was sort of explaining my first few years with diabetes, I'm only 5 years in, but my first few years with type 1 diabetes, I too used that exact same phraseology. And it's, I mean, I'll get you to explain, you know, what you mean by that in just a minute. But for me, it was that I didn't necessarily expect the healthcare professional sat across from me to have all the answers, because I think I knew that probably everyone's experience with type 1 diabetes and food and exercise and the body and all that sort of stuff will be slightly different. And the rules and the things that they give you are good as general starting points, but you'll only really sort of master it if you become interested in it yourself and investigate how your body reacts individually to the diabetes. So that was my science experiment. What was yours?
It really, for me, like you said, the professionals can give you a decent starting place, but I found even you're 5 years in, even 5 years in for me, I was 12. Even by that point, there wasn't much more they could give me. And back in the mid 2000s, there really wasn't that much information about how to manage this better with exercise. So it became not just a trial and error game, but it became, okay, I did this at this time on this day. If I can try to control every single variable to keep it the same. So, okay, what did I eat beforehand? How much did I dose? What was my exercise? Like keeping track of all these variables, something I could manipulate one at a time and start to get these things a lot more in line. And I did it the most with exercise, shocker. And then the other one was with food that was prepared by other people. So like a restaurant. So I'd go somewhere and it was a great excuse to get to eat at restaurants and try the same thing, right? Because like, oh, I'm gonna have the same dish four different times over the next couple months. And I'm going to see, okay, the first time I dosed really well. The second time I did the same thing. It didn't work as well. What could have gone wrong? And it was really that coming back to it again and again and again and saying, okay, instead of I ate this ice cream, I give up, my blood sugar went to 350. It was okay. I'm not going to let that derail me from trying this again. I enjoy this. I am going to take a different approach and really taking that approach of adjustment and constantly adjusting. That was really the key to me, because otherwise a lot of people will just give up right away. They'll have cake, they'll give it up. They won't eat it. And they're just saying, I'm afraid of it. And that is the biggest thing that I don't want people to do is say, hey, I can never eat this again. I have diabetes.
And I think what I've seen more in people that aren't so engaged or never gave themselves the opportunity to be an experiment and to come to their own conclusions is that they just sort of accept the rules and they accept what the healthcare professionals are telling them. So, for example, if you're told to give yourself six, I mean, when I was first diagnosed, I mean, I never did it. I never listened to what they told me to because it sounded ridiculous. And I didn't even notice that it sounded ridiculous. It just didn't, I just sort of did my own thing straight away because I think I'd sort of understood that insulin needed to be varied depending on what you were eating and that sort of stuff. So they told me to have one injection of six units with my evening meal, as well as my, other injection of background insulin. And I was just thinking that, like, well, that just doesn't make sense because that's not how you manage diabetes. I think healthcare professionals are two things, really. Trying to first make it, you know, an accessible way, you know, a slow increase in knowledge so, you know, more people can get it, you know, more people learn slower, I guess. But also, it's sort of like if that's, you know, if you're the sort of person that will just sort of listen and accept, then you never will get to really understand how your diabetes is controlled because you're just constantly just being, you know, you need to be spoon-fed that information. But I don't know what I'm completely getting at here, but you know, maybe it's not all good, is it? We need to encourage people to take some ownership as well.
And to question things a little bit more, like I'll get people that will come to me and they'll say the same thing that you said where, oh, I was told to take four units at this meal. And then they'll say, oh, well, if I think I'm going higher, I should take six. But I'm like, where does that come from? They don't understand the whole insulin to carb ratio standpoint. And I don't know if it's just laziness on the doctor's part or if it's just lack of information or the doctor doesn't have enough time with them. But there's all these people that aren't getting the proper education and the proper information to be able to manage their blood sugars well. So they get so hung up in, holy cow, my numbers are bad. I'm afraid the doctor is going to yell at me and be upset with me that they then don't just change anything. There's like, great, I'd rather just listen to exactly what they say, even if it's not working. And that's the other thing that's terrifying is then the quality of life goes down so much, or you get the people that are just afraid of carbs, afraid of food. And then they're like, oh, my numbers are great, but they're miserable. And that doesn't, that's not a good way to live either.
Yeah, I interviewed a personal trainer from very, very close to where I am in Bristol here in England, and he was diagnosed at the age of 15, and very early on he would just not eat any carbs because he didn't like injecting. So, I guess that, you know, the damage is done quite early on. So I guess when you get to meet people and, you know, they finally, you know, take on your system. What's it called? Your diabetes and that's it. That's it. And when people finally come along and, you know, get on board with your Diabetes Insider, you're having to maybe unpick some quite, you know, difficult relationships with food and, you know, years of misinformation.
Oh, and it's, I would say at least 50% of the time people are coming in with a absolutely terrified of carbs or anything that tastes good or anything that they used to eat prior to diagnosis. Like there was a woman I had, I think she was diagnosed really late. She was diagnosed, I think, in her 50s or early 60s. Wow, and wow. She obviously had lived for a while. So she's had all sorts of food. She was terrified of anything that had more than 15 grams of carbs in it. So she would never eat anything else. And I had to slowly, it took time and we acclimated her to having things that she enjoyed. And now she's at the point where, look, she's still controlled, but she still knows I can go have some sort of pasta dish or I can have some sort of dessert periodically and not be freaked out about what her blood sugar is going to do because she knows exactly what to do. But watching that epiphany moment, like that light bulb moment go off, there's no feeling like it in the world. And they realize, yeah, I can actually be free now. This is amazing.
And we're going to return to some of these questions in just a second. But I don't know whether you have a similar thing where you are. But in the UK and England especially, we have this thing called a carb counting course. So, I mean, I had to go on it before I had my insulin pump. And you basically sort of learn to carb count and you work out your carb ratio. But I just remember it being just, I mean, it's great. It's completely free. It's on the NHS, all that sort of stuff. And I'm sure loads of people get a lot out of it. But I just found that it was really, really long and drawn out for the amount of sort of actual useful knowledge that we got out of the, I think it was like every Monday for like 4 hours for a whole month. And I mean, I could have got benefited from them just saying, you know, here, let's work out your carb ratio. Oh, it's 1 to 6 every 16 grams. You need to take 1 unit of insulin for every 16 grams from now on. Off you go. I mean, I would have got that from there. But what I would have more benefited from is the other parts of the food. We focus a lot on carbs. We've actually got a question on this that we'll get to in a little bit. But there's a lot more on your plate of food, you know, the fats, the proteins, which all do have an effect on your blood sugar.
Oh, and that's, I tell people, you've been trained. It's one of the first things I tell them right when we start working together is you've been trained to only look at carbs. Well, welcome to fat, welcome to protein, because those will both impact your blood sugar as much, if not more, than the carbs will. Because you know with carbs, you just have plain old carbs, goes up, it goes down. But you throw the fat in there and that slows the digestion down and it doesn't kick in for 3 to 6 hours, depending who you are, depending what you ate. And suddenly everything gets thrown out of whack. So that is usually one of the first things I go over, except for the very rare occasion that someone already has it nailed down.
And what are the sort of, you know, sort of brief bits of information that could help someone or maybe just point them in the right direction if they wanted to know more about how these fats and proteins do affect your blood sugar? Because I mean, even in my case, you know, I have the Isolate Whey protein shake, but regardless of, even though that says zero carbs, it's like I've drank you know, maybe not like a full fat, full sugar bottle of Coke, but something more like a coffee with milk in it. It has the same sort of glycemic impact on my blood sugar as something with, you know, maybe 15 to 20 grams of carbs rather than the zero that it's telling me it has on the bag.
Well, in that case, with particularly protein powder, it's so broken down already that it gets absorbed really quickly. And they had a study in people that did not have diabetes and they had them eat a piece of white bread. And then a couple of days later, they had them have a scoop of protein powder. And their insulin response that their pancreas let out was the same in both. So that's why you're seeing that blood sugar spike like that, because it will do that. And basically the only real solution is protein will break down into sugar if there are no carbs to be able to, I usually say, protect it. So in whey in particular, you're going to have to dose no matter what. But most of the time, if you have a big, heavy protein meal and you're very low on the carbs, your body has more protein than it needs. Cool. It's going to break down somewhat into glucose. Now, the amount is going to depend on you and what you eat. And it gets a lot more in the weeds. But the basic info is protein will break down to carbs, especially if there's no other carbs eaten in the meal. So in your case with that protein shake, that's why you're spiking.
And I just know from what you've just said there, you've rocked people's worlds. People will be, you know, thinking that they've been lied to for however long that they've been managing their type 1 diabetes. But it is, it's almost like I feel like I'm, you know, trash talking doctors and healthcare professionals. I'm not, that's not my intention. I'm just talking about my experience and my frustrations, but I feel like they're worried of putting too much information to us. They almost don't believe that we could really understand the full complexities of a condition like this and how to manage it. But if we did have that information readily available, I mean, that's the whole reason for the job that you do. People need that information, people want that information. Just think how more people will be able to successfully manage their diabetes and navigate a buffet of delicious food as well.
Well, and that's exactly the thing is I want it so every person that I work with, by the time we're done, they can say, I can walk into a buffet and have the food I want and know within reason that if my blood sugar has an issue, this is why. This is what I didn't do. So they have that toolkit to know buffet, exercise, everything that diabetes could throw at them. They have an answer for it. So they're not concerned that they're limited in any way.
Great. Well, we are nearly out of time, so we'll whiz through some of these questions really quickly. So Jen says, how can I eat a whole pie of pizza without gaining weight or having crazy high sugar? I don't know. Can you do magic?
So with that, without gaining weight, theoretically, yeah. So if you have your daily nutrition goal, your target in terms of the calorie side of things, if that pizza fits into your target and you eat the whole pizza, theoretically, by the law of thermodynamics, you should not gain any weight. Now, from a blood sugar standpoint, you're going to have to dose for that those carbs, and you're going to have to make sure that if you're on a pump, you're definitely paying attention to an extended dose. And if you're not on a pump, you're going to have to make sure you are a really, 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 really seriously looking at the clock so you know when to take that dose for that fat, because otherwise that will come back to haunt you sometime in the range of 3 to 6 hours later.
Susan here says, why do they push carbs and insist carbs are necessary? I've asked many dietitians this when I'm forced by insurance to see one.
So they push carbs because carbs are the primary driver of blood sugars going up. So they, and it's in so many different foods, they figure, oh, okay, well, you have to know carbs because if you eat this cookie or you eat this graham cracker, your number's going to go up. So that's why they don't pay attention to the rest, because it's the main thing. If you had someone drink a shot of olive oil, their blood sugar is not going to do anything.
And then you'd really be concerned about their mental state if they are resorting to shotting olive oil.
If that's your jam, by all means, but I will never be caught doing that. So
is it weird that I imagined it? I imagined what that would be like, and it wasn't a good place to go to in my brain. And back to the question that I think we probably answered is, why does dietary advice for diabetes follow a reductionist theory, count carbohydrates, but don't make any allowances for fat and protein? Even the ADA, the American Diabetes Association, have recognized that fats can cause considerable insulin resistance. Now, that's one thing that we didn't touch on. We talked about the glycemic impact of protein, and especially well broken down protein, but people that are sort of low carb, high fatting it, you know, for their diet, they could potentially be driving up their insulin resistance over a long time.
They feasibly could be, a lot of times, because once fat's in your bloodstream, it doesn't clear for about 6 to 8 hours. So if fat's had without carbs, it's really nothing to be too worried about, but it might be a little more difficult because there's that resistance there that it's making happen. But if you have fat with carbs, it's causing resistance and your number's up. So that's why it's so hard to get the number down. So nothing to be super, super, super worried about if you're on a low carb, high fat diet, just something to be aware of if your number goes high for some reason. But it's when the two are had in combination where you just have to have a game plan, because if you don't, you're asking for it?
So I experience something, because I go through sort of stages where I am low carb and then I'm eating more carbs, and then, you know, I don't know, it's just me. I can't pick one thing and stick to it. But when I come off a prolonged time of eating low fat, high fat, low carb, I do find that carbs are faster acting and they're harder to deal with after a period of eating very few of them. Is that something that's quite regular?
Pretty common, because think about it. It'd be the equivalent of you haven't worked out in a few months and now you start working out. That weight that might have been 20 kilos suddenly feels really hard when it wasn't hard a few months ago. Same thing, your body's machinery that's used to processing carbs haven't been used in a while. So you got to get them fired up and going. Once you've done that for a couple of weeks, or even within about a week, probably, you're in a much better place, and you'll notice the carbs are not affecting you quite as drastically as they were right away.
And then the last real question before we end on the topic that everybody wants to know about, and I'm pretty sure you can probably guess what that is. Kimmy asks, why some foods like organic bread remain a mystery when following nutritional facts, yet with the correction factor, levels don't react accordingly. So taking into account, I'm not sure I really understood that question, but I think from that, what she meant was when you look at the nutritional facts on the bag that the bread comes in, you take the insulin for that, but then what happens to your blood sugar after that doesn't really act in a normal way. That might be something to do with the composition of the bread, is that right?
From what I'm understanding from the question, yeah, because it's going to depend. The different carbs are going to respond in different ways. You'll get the carbs, like if it's a whole wheat bread versus a white bread, that fiber should slow it down a little bit in terms of the absorption and in terms of how high your blood sugar goes. But again, if you have white bread versus Skittles or a candy of some sort, that's going to respond differently too. So if I'm understanding the question like you're describing it, the composition of the carb will dictate how high your blood sugar goes. Even if you have 18 grams of candy versus 18 grams of whole wheat pasta, the two are going to respond differently, even though the carbs are the same.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, are carbs, all carbs created equal or not?
No. Not at
no.
all.
No.
Okay, so the topic that, I mean, we've already had a question about it, but the one that everybody wants to know about is pizza. That's the whole question. Pizza, why, God, why? And then someone asking about Krispy Kreme. But donuts aside, because everybody wants to know how to do pizza right. I think I've done pizza right on a few occasions, but how do you make it work?
Ooh, I was gonna say, I'm still stuck on that donut. But with the pizza, the best thing, at least from my experience, from what I've seen with people I've worked with, is you dose for those carbs, you get, and this is something that I would have to know specifically the person's situation and all that, but from a very general standpoint, you dose for the carbs, you wait for 2.5-ish, 3-ish hours. And then you think about, okay, do I see any sort of change in blood sugar? And then at that point, you know, that's when the fat's gonna start to kick in. If you start seeing that creeping up, that's when it's time to hit with some more insulin with respect to that. That would be about the most broad level term I could give without being like, you need to do this and blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. And when I have a little bit of a pump holiday, still something what I do is I'll give myself a manual extended bolus. So, you know, a couple of units, wait a minute, a couple of units. But yeah, if you're using a pump, use that extended bolus. But there we go. What a interesting episode of the All For One podcast. Been great to speak to you, Ben. Where can people, we've talked about the TikTok, but where else can people come and find you if they're desperate for more of the info that you've got on offer?
So Instagram is where most of the education will be in terms of learning stuff. So that would just be at manofzeel, manofzeel. Same username for TikTok if you want some diabetes entertainment in your life. And then if you're thinking, hey, I want just more information on what you do specifically, yourdiabetesinsider.com.
And that is a silent T before the Z. So man of zeal. Do you know, so there's a sort of colloquial sort of idiosyncrasy and an accent here in England, in a place called Yorkshire. So what they do, they instead of saying the, they will drop the H-E, so they'll say, I'm off to shop. So it just reminded me then, man to zeal. That's how a Yorkshireman would say that. But there we go. That doesn't really make much sense in the case of your TikTok name. But regardless, that's where my brain went to. But Ben, thank you so much for joining me here on an episode of the All For One podcast. It's been great to talk to you. I have just realized that I only follow you on TikTok on my, you know, my secret sort of spam account, so I'll follow you on my main one because we should have each other on our FYPs. But that is the end of today's episode. Thank you to everyone who's listened along. Do go follow Ben on all of the platforms like he's mentioned and check him out, and please leave me a review, leave me some stars, 5 if you're feeling generous, and some words too, wherever you're listening to this, on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Spotify, on Acast, Pocket Cast, wherever you're listening to, please leave me a review, because I'll be picking my favorite one at the end of the month, and you will receive, like I said, doesn't exist yet, but this brand new All For One t-shirt, exclusive only for top reviewers. So be busy in the review box, and I'll see you next time for another episode of the All For One podcast. Bye bye for now. Thank you so much for watching and listening to the All For One podcast. Remember, today's sponsors are My Diabetes, who have an absolutely massive offer for All For One listeners. Just head to www.mydiabetes.diet/all-4-1. And if you use the coupon code ALL41, ALL40NE, then you will get 75% off the 6-month plan. All of the links and information you need will be in the description or the show notes, so please check those out if you are interested. Thanks for listening or watching. Bye-bye.